This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Rechte Neckfahne mit dem linken Fuß. Bringt den Ball auf den zweiten Pfosten. Tesche! Tor! 1:0 für den VfL Bochum.
Da draußen ist der Ball frei. Und jetzt ist er drin. Jetzt ist er drin. Und hier ist Botzen, macht das Tor.
Das Tor, der zählt das 2:2. Dresden ist wieder da. Röser ist da.
Für Rausch, der setzt an zur Flanke, da kommt der Ball. Tor, 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 Tor.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast with me, Matthew Karagic. It's a pleasure to have your company on this week's edition. We will be digressing into match day 21 that was on the weekend. There was plenty of controversy with a number of games, and we will look at those incidents in just a moment. Joining me today on this podcast is the one and only Eva Lotte-Boll. Eva, welcome.
Good morning from Germany, from Hanover to be specific, and I hope you're all doing good.
Yes, of course, making the move from Bielefeld to Hanover is the lovely Eva. So if you do end up seeing her, give a shout out. We should, I guess, talk about the football and not the moving. But there was some sort of moving that caused the controversy in this Dresden and Darmstadt game. And that's where we'll start with the battle in the basement. Two teams that separated by a few points heading into the match day. Dresden so desperately needing a win to keep pace with the teams above, and they couldn't do it. They went down 3-2. They started well. Josef Hushbauer, who of course is on loan from Slavia Prague, opened the scoring. Patrick Schmidt got the other goal for Dresden. Should have had a second of the match, and this is what we shall talk about. It was disallowed for offside. This one caused a lot of grievance, being that the player, Yanis Nicolaou, wasn't really involved in the play that much either. And as a result, Dresden, A, should feel very aggrieved, but they dropped 3 vital points.
Yeah, I think especially if you look at the goal being very, very important for Dresden to at least get a point out of this. The decision for me is not really understandable, because if the referees on the pitch would have had immediately decided that it was offside, then I could understand it. And then if you have VAR to check it, it's not a clear decision that was wrong on the field in the immediate moment. But being it ruled off for offside with VAR, and Nicolaou being passively offside, not really interfering with the play, he runs away from the goal, more or less. It's not really understandable to call this offside. If you look at the rest of the game, Dresden wasn't really happy with the refereeing. For me, the red card was a bit too harsh as well. Of course, he straightly runs into the Darmstadt keeper. But in there's a Darmstadt player next to him. They both run into it, and he tries to stop. He can't jump over the goalkeeper at the right time. So red card is a bit harsh for me as well.
Absolutely, and it really summed up the game. It was really poorly officiated. You could tell that the referee was losing his grip on the game in general. And it's as a neutral, it's disappointing that you have a game which has such significance, even with there being 13 games remaining in the season, that a fixture like this with a team like Dresden in must-win territory, to have it really decided by the officiating crew is really disappointing, and I do feel a little bit sorry for the Dresden fans, because they should have had the third and through Schmidt, and you may argue that they could have even gone on to win it. For for Darmstadt, their goals all coming in the first half. Sung Ho Pike, Tobias Kemper, and Serdar Dursun getting on the score sheet, and it really just helped them enough to get the 3 points. But yeah, this game has a bit of an asterisk with the VAR. Let's move on to the other six-pointer of the match day. Bochum made the journey to Wiesbaden. This game was not pretty on the eye. It was a perfect exhibition of two teams that, you know, despite the fact that Bochum could score a lot of goals, there are a lot of times where they might not have hit three sets of goals. But either it was Simon Zoller who was the difference maker, and a much needed away win for Bochum.
Well, yeah, definitely, especially with the nil or zero goals clean sheet for Riemann as well. I think that was really important to have a, I don't want to say stable defense, because it didn't look very stable. They were really, really lucky in some parts of the game, but it gives the defense some looking forward. It was only the second game in the season they kept a clean sheet, but I would totally agree with you, not a really beautiful game to watch, a good game to watch. I think Wien was really unlucky to didn't use all their chances. They had a lot of them. I think they hit the post two or three times. And then, as I said, Riemann had a really, really good performance being back in the goal for Bochum. Very crucial win for Bochum. It puts them out of the relegation zone a bit. So, yeah, very clinical.
Yes, even if it was clinical off Heinz Lindner, straight to Solo, and, of course, the patented left arm flex, which he's got going as his goal celebration. For Wiesbaden, as you mentioned, they had a bunch of chances in this game. Riemann, as you mentioned, Eva, was in great form. And I think both keepers really had the measure in this one. But, yeah, it just the one chance that Bochum had, really, in terms of a fortunate rebound, Soler buried it, his sixth of the season. They have a tough test, though. They host Stuttgart on Monday night. Wiesbaden travel to Regensburg on Saturday afternoon. There are two other teams in that scrap who secured victories on match day 21, those being Nuremberg and Hanover. Nuremberg 1-0 winners away from home at Osnabrück. Hannoverians getting his fourth goal of the season on the hour. Whilst Hanover scored an impressive 3-1 away win at Greuther Fürth, goals coming from Genki Haraguchi, Cedric Teukert, who both scored in their last game as well, and Simon Stieler, who is the under-19 captain, came on as a substitute. He tapped in from Linton Miner's ball in to the empty net to score on his debut. I guess the question I have to ask, Eva, is which victory out of the two was the more impressive for you?
Well, a difficult one to decide, but I actually go with Nuremberg just from the overall performance in the second half. I think they were really, really good. Robin Hack was a bit unlucky. He didn't score. He was brilliant in this game all over the second half. And they have Nuremberg now have won two consecutive games, which is really important for them. And they also kept a clean sheet, and winning in Osnabrück isn't that easy throughout the season, so huge win for them, I'd say.
It also means it's 3 wins out of the last 4 under Jens Keller, which is showing marketable signs of improvement. You mentioned Robin Hack, and I think he's been by far their best player this season. Bought from Hoffenheim at the start of the season, and he's got that real knack of creativity and attacking flair that a team like Nuremberg, who had all sorts of struggles last season in the Bundesliga, having a player like that, he has been an absolute find for them. But I'll give Hanover some props. They, you know, they played a Fürth side who were coming off a pretty comfortable derby win over Jahn Regensburg. But they had to do it the hard way when Josef Elez was sent off. Of course, it was a VAR decision, which was correctly given as a penalty. He was sent off as a second yellow for the handball. But I guess a goalkeeper who's warranted a lot of criticism over the past few seasons, Ron Robert Sila, he performed absolutely fantastically, saved the penalty from Branimir Hrgota. And we talk about the importance of goalkeeping, Eva. You look at Nürnberg, who have played 5 different goalkeepers this season, Hanover just the 2. How important is it for Kenan Kocacz's side to have a Ron Robert-Sila that's firing on all cylinders?
I think it's really important. Ron Robert-Sila is still a very good goalkeeper, although he hadn't many opportunities to show it in the past month or even years. If you have, for Hanover, it's really important to have a goalkeeper in the back that you can trust and you can rely on, especially being down to 10 men and also being throughout the season defensively not really stable. So for Sila, it's all in all a very good step forward in self-confidence as well. And if you have someone as experienced as Sila in your back that regains his strength, it's really, really important to go forward. And it's they will hope he can more or less copy what he did against Fürth on the weekend against Hamburg.
They do. Of course, Nürnberg will be traveling to Heidenheim on Friday night, so it's a big games for them as well, as they look to continue their march away from the bottom three. We'll take our first break, and on the other side, we'll look at the top of the standings, the three teams, Bielefeld, Hamburg, and Stuttgart on the other side. The fight for promotion is very much heating up. Three teams in Arminia Bielefeld, Hamburg and Stuttgart only separated by 3 points. All three points on this weekend. In fact, all three of them managed to keep a clean sheet. We'll start at the Alm as Arminia Bielefeld hosted Jahn Regensburg, and this was a non-contest at all, at any stage in this game. It was completely one-sided. Arminia Bielefeld were dominant. And if you were to say that waking up at, say, 5:45 in the morning, getting ready to go to work, and seeing that Fabian Klose was not one of the scorers in that 6, you would have had to slap me in the face. And that's what was the case. Goals from Sibio Suku, John Simon Edmondson, Manuel Prietl. One of the more hilarious own goals you'll see from Marcel Correa. Reinhard Jarbo and Cedric Brunner also adding, this was nasty. And but if you're a Bielefeld fan, this was the perfect day under the sun. Your take, Eva, on the impressive 6-0 win?
I gotta say, especially the first half, I was really, really impressed by the performance. Not only that we scored 2 goals, and especially with 2 of the players that came in newly into the lineup, with Sevio Zuku replacing, of course, Andreas Vogelsammer, and Sean Simon Edmundsen replacing Reinhard Jarbo. They showed that them putting in was the right decision by Uwe Neuhaus. Especially the Edmundsen goal was really cool. He said the last time that the top corner is always free. And yet again, he proved this right. I really liked the performance. Marcel Harte was once more extraordinary. A lot of people I spoke about this were saying this, that they can't really believe Union let him go. As you said, the own goal was a bit... Yeah, it's one of the stupidest own goals I've seen. He just has to look back to his goalkeeper and he can see that this isn't working. So really, really stupid at that stage. And then totally broke down. They got 5. So Regensburg conceded 5 goals and 3 goals in 5 minutes. But especially for Bielefeld not being really strong at home, now having 8 goals to 0 in this last 2 games, it's really good. And with those six goals. They're really close to HSV when it comes to goal difference. HSV has 45 goals that they shot and 21 goals conceded. This is the same amount that Armenia conceded, but they have now 43 goals, so really, really good to optimize the goal difference as they could.
Absolutely. It's also Armenia Bielefeld's third consecutive clean sheet since the defeat to St. Pauli before Christmas. Yeah, it was super impressive from all angles. They were great defensively. They very much limited the amount of chances that Regensburg had. Only five shots total and not a single one hitting the target of Stefan Ortega's goal. They worked a lot harder than Regensburg, and it was pretty evident. You look at the distance covered, 115.8 kilometers to 111.6. Just better work rate, more industrious going forward, and six goals is the result. For Jan, dogged. Let's say hit the reset button and on to the next one. The opponents for these two sides coming up, Bielefeld will be on the road at Greuther Fürth on Saturday afternoon. Jan will be hosting VfB Wiesbaden. Let's go to Hamburg now. They hosted Karlsruhe. They needed two goals in the second half from Lucas Hinterseer to ensure the victory. I think we're in agreement here, though, when we look at a particular player who was really pulling the strings in midfield for Hamburg. That was Louis Schaub. He's only made a couple of appearances for the Red Shorts, but he is already becoming a pivotal cog in the piece for Hamburg.
Yeah, I just highlights this morning, and for example, the shot when he hit the post, you can just see what an extraordinary footballer he is. I'm feeling lucky for him that although the first half at Köln, he didn't really play a role. When he played the Zweite Bundesliga for Köln, you could already see what a decent footballer he is. So his step to or his way to changing to Hamburg or transferring to Hamburg, at least on loan, was a really good one. Never thought I will say this. Normally, players changing to or transferring to HSV aren't really lucky ones, but he is a really, really good piece, a really pivotal piece in the Hamburg play in the last three games. I think he's one of the reasons they lost all. They won all three games in a row in 2020. Really, really good performance by him throughout this season so far.
Yeah, they're in great shape since the Christmas break. They've been very good defensively. They've only conceded twice since the break. Once from Nürnberg, they won that game 4-1, 3-1 away at Bochum. So it is something with the way they're going about it that has shown that the winter break has given them a rejuvenation of sorts. They still are probably not comfortable with what they've got going forward. Hinterseer has been a bit hit and miss, so I think Hecking still trying to find the right mix up front, but obviously when you've got players like Schelp and Kittel, everything is probably going a-okay. For Karlsruhe, yeah, it's getting really difficult for them. It's another defeat. Christian Eichner was in charge this time. They really didn't offer much at all in terms of attacking presence. They did have the one chance that could have really unsettled Hamburg, but that is now a fourth game without scoring a goal, and it's their fifth consecutive defeats. The last time they picked up points was against Armenia Bielefeld away. Since then, they have completely fallen apart, and now they are in some serious trouble at the bottom of the table. Let's move on to Stuttgart then. They hosted Erzgebirge Aue, and it was a comfortable 3-0 win for them. Daniel Didavi scoring twice in this game, and Mario Gomez scoring in his third consecutive Zweite Bundesliga game to give Stuttgart a comfortable win, keep them very much in the hunt for promotion. And it was really another impressive home performance for Stuttgart.
Yeah, I would say that it was a bit more impressive than the 3-0 win over Heidenheim, because this was the game where there were more or less 90 minutes the better team, which wasn't really the case in some ways of the Heidenheim game. But I think Daniel Idavi kind of gets reborn in this game. I think really, really good performance by him. Good performance throughout the game as well. Good performance by Korbel as well in the back of the goal. I think Auer was really, really poor. And once again, admitted or more or less proving the point that they're away really a really, really bad side that is kind of worrying if you compare it to the home game against Armenia, for example, which was a complete different game. By the way, they just do not really replicate what they do at home, and that might be a problem for the rest of the season.
It will be a watch this space kind of thing with Owl. It almost feels like we know what to expect from them. They are a very difficult team to play at home, but on the road, they're very beatable. I wouldn't like to compare them to Union Berlin, but Union Berlin had that tendency last season where you played them at the stadium under Fostieri, and they were a different kettle of fish. But when you played them on the road, you always felt like you were in with a chance of getting a result. So it is an interesting thing with them. I guess with Stuttgart, though, it's their second consecutive 3-0 home win. 7 points out of a total 9 to start 2020. It's been a decent start under Pellegrini at Matarazzo. Just the question is whether they can continue that going forward. They need consistency, but they also need to show that they are dominating games, because that is what the likes of Thomas Hitzlsperger would be expecting for them. Of course, Stuttgart will be at Bochum on Monday night. Our host, Kiel, on Sunday afternoon. We'll take our final break, and on the other side, we'll look at the leftovers, what was left from match day 21, and of course, your topic questions. And now we reach the leftovers. What is left of match day 21? Well, there are two teams that we're going to talk about, one being Heidenheim, the other being Holstein Kiel. Heidenheim took a 1-0 win over Sandhausen, Tim Kleinitzt getting his 8th goal of the season to ensure that Heidenheim remained 4th heading into this weekend's fixtures. In terms of the actual game, Eva, there's probably not a whole lot to talk about, but it was a good, solid win for Heidenheim to keep within touching distance of the top three.
Yeah, I think they, after the 1-0 that Kleindienst scored, they didn't need to do much more because Sandhausen wasn't really offensively attending this game, I'd say, to put it nicely. I think they were really, really poor going forward. Heidenheim just could look at what they were doing, didn't really need to score the 2-0. So, I think after the goal, the match got really, really boring. So there's not really a lot to say about this.
Yeah, it was just almost a stash and grab kind of thing. Grab the goal, stash defensively. 3 points, and that's what they did. It was, Sandhausen did have their chances, but they just weren't clinical enough to put one in the back of the net. Let's talk about last night's game then, which is the last game to kind of talk about. As Kiel hosted St. Pauli, 2-1 win for Kiel. They did it a little bit tougher towards the end of the game, a little bit self-inflicted. So the goal scorer, Sally Lozchan, opened the scoring. Then Henk Veerman equalised. And then Yanni Serra, with his 7th goal of the season, after only being on for a couple of minutes, gave Kiel the win. There was a penalty, which Veerman missed. It was a very weird game for Veerman. And then from the penalty, they gave Jonas Merfurt gave away an indirect free kick, and then multiple corners before Kiel were able to hold on. Eva, this was a good win for Kiel, and we were talking about this off air that the Oli Werner revolution has seen Kiel come from a position where they looked like they were going to have a tough season this season to now being sixth.
Yeah, I think we spoke about this off record. If someone like Ole Werner would have been coach at the beginning of the season and not André Schubert, which is still the most surprising coach this season for me, or appointment of the season for me, because I think for me that was really clear, it's not going to work out. I think you can see that Ole Werner, a coach that it's not the most famous coach in German football, that he was the right man for this team. He found a very good way to motivate. They're not playing them football that we're playing under Tim Walter, of course, but it still brings them to get points. I thought it was a really, really weird game with Kiel being the better team, but St. Pauli not really offering much, which is not really surprising because they're not really good. They're not really good team away. I think they only got 4 points out of all away games this season. Deserve win for Kiel. Really like their way of playing. Will be an interesting game when they travel to Aue on Sunday with a team that is really, really good at home, and Kiel regaining their strength at the moment.
Yeah, it was actually quite interesting to see how they set up. In fact, they actually went with a bit of a André Schubert style in terms of the setup. They had the false nine in operation with Lee Jae-sung, which worked as they were able to maintain possession quite a lot. But in terms of their offensive production, it did leave a lot to be desired. They did have some good chances through Emmanuel Yeo, and then, of course, the goal through Ozchan, Finn Porat, with an unbelievably good ball to set up the opener. But they looked better structurally when Sarah came on and they had Lee play on the right. So I think that was the structure they went for in this game, was more specific to the way they felt St. Pauli were going to play, which was sit back, allow Kiel to have a lot of possession, which is the way it went. But I don't really think that's the best way to use Lee. We know what kind of player he is at Kiel, and I think it's almost misusing, but it worked in the end as they were able to get the results. And for those who enjoy a bit of match analysis, I'll be looking at this one. It does come out tomorrow, so that would be Wednesday of the time of recording this. So do check that out. I'll leave a link on my Twitter. And let's move on to the topic questions. We have two-ish. The first is from Steel Penguin at Steel Penguin 3. He says, hello, everybody. With the injury to Adrian Fine, is it down to the DFB or the league or maybe the individual teams to have concussion protocols in place? Now, we both think this is a fantastic question. Eva, I'll let you have the first opinion on this. What do you reckon needs to be done to protect players from returning to the field of play when they clearly have a concussion?
Well, I think a concussion protocol is a really, really good idea. Injuries to the head are not something you would or should joke about. I think it can happen very easily. For example, there was one game this match day where the player was hit by the ball and had was to say, okay, he has has a headache. But I think you really have to take care of this more often. I think someone who's really speaking up about this is, for example, Klaus Jasula of SC Paderborn, who said like a year ago that he thinks everyone should wear a helmet. I wouldn't say it in that way, but this goes in the right direction of concussion protocols, as everyone has to kind of get into doping controls after the game. They should go to concussion protocols as well as soon they have been hit. And just if someone is hit in the head, they should have a complete scan of their head in a way that concussion protocol says it should be, because as said before, this is a really, really serious topic and something you can't really see on first sight whether someone is deeply injured.
Yeah, I would like to see something quite similar to what they use in Aussie rules footy, which is when a player receives or takes a head knock, they undergo the concussion protocol. They get taken down to the rooms where they take tests for about 20 minutes, and they're not allowed to return to the field of play for 20 minutes. This, of course, excludes during the quarter time, half time, and three quarter time breaks. If the player passes said tests, then they are able to return to the field of play. But as we know also with that, the loophole being that sometimes you can have a delayed concussion and the symptoms might not arise straight away. So I guess the suggestion could be if a player goes down with a serious head injury, perhaps they should be substituted off and another player should be allowed to come on. However, it's not a forced substitution until the player has undergone tests to ensure that he's either okay to return to the field of play or, you know, subbed out straight away and that's the end of it. So there needs to be more done, because I think the fact that Fine came back on and played the last 10 minutes of the first half is absolutely ridiculous. It's not the first time teams have done that. I think Leon Goretzka at Schalke is probably the worst case scenario of the lot, where he was clearly in absolutely no state to play, but for some strange reason, he was told to get back out there and go at it. And player safety needs to be at the forefront of that. And hopefully more teams and the league in general will take it as seriously as other leagues do, because you don't want a situation where players at the end of their careers are in such a bad way that, you know, it really affects their life outside of the professional game, and that's something you do not want to see. Our last sort of question, because there's multiple parts to this, is from Dennis at Dennis Easy Sport. If you don't know who Dennis is, he is a Jan Regensburg fan. Of course, Jan Regensburg's game with Arminia Bielefeld was on Fox, I believe, in the United States, with commentary from Phil Bonney, he's Mr. Bundesliga in terms of the commentary ranks. And that game was only broadcasted because Gladbach and Köln was cancelled and to be rescheduled thanks to the storms that have been happening across Europe. He wants to know, or he thinks that Jan were the laughing stock of the world. That's debatable. Not only that, he thinks he's the only one who's constructive with their thing. So I guess the four sections are: what can I do to have more fans discussing with me about Jan Regensburg on Twitter? Why was Jan so miserable? Do you think that they'll have a chance against Wiesbaden, and how can I promote Jan on Twitter after this? Eva, which question would you like to take a stab at first?
I think maybe the second question, why was Jan so miserable even with our best team? This is what happens in the league. There are just days when you can't really bring on the pitch what your team can do. I know that from experience. For example, when we played Köln last season and lost there 5-1, this happens even if you have a really, really good team on the pitch. There are those days and they're still eighth. So yeah, Regensburg is still eighth. I think they just need a couple more wins until the end of the season. So not that much to worry, and as I said, there are just some of those games. Do you think they have a tiny bit of chance next week against Wiesbaden? There's always a chance. Otherwise, it would be very stupid to play football. And of course, there is a chance. Wiesbaden is not the best team in the league if you look where they stand. It's not an easy game, but I'm sure Regensburg will show a reaction to this last two games. It's no shame to lose to us or one of the best teams in the league at the moment. Table-wise especially, so just calm down a bit. Those were two games that weren't really good, but the season is still pretty long, so I would go a bit down with the criticism.
Yeah, very fair. I'll take the other two questions then. In terms of getting people to discuss, it's tricky. I mean, let's be a little bit honest here. Jan is not a particularly big club. Especially even within the region of Bavaria, let alone the region of Germany. So it is tricky to get people to discuss the games, especially if they're not watching it. I guess when you have the link with a city like Aberdeen, it's more likely they're probably watching Aberdeen play than Jan. And considering also that the Zweite Bundesliga isn't broadcasted to every country, which makes it a lot harder to view games, and thus, especially in English language speaking circles, it is very tricky to almost have a discussion when the viewership audience in terms of where it's available around the world is limited. In terms of promoting Jan as a club, that's probably more on them and their marketing department having to do maybe a better job in getting more content out, being a bit more creative. It's not a criticism of what they've got, but if you want a club that is more active on Twitter, that's probably what they need to do. In terms of yourself, Dennis, tweet during the game is, I guess, something that you can do. Tweet the action as it is going on, like some of the guys, like the Football Radar guys. They do a fantastic job. Kind of live tweeting the game, as do the clubs. That might be an opportunity for you, and maybe that may help promote Jan as a club. But yeah, it's a tricky one. There are a lot of clubs that will stick within the German circles, whereas others want to branch to bigger projects and sort of continue to grow their fan base. So it's a six of one kind of situation. That's it. It's full time on this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Big thank you to Eva. Thank you for coming on. Hope you've settled in well in Hanover.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me on once again.
It is a pleasure. Of course, we're going to plug two things right now. Of course, as I mentioned before, tomorrow, Holstein Kiel St. Pauli match analysis will be out. So you can check that on my Twitter, or probably retweet it on the Zweite Bundesliga pod Twitter as well. And of course, if you didn't listen to it, you should. The Eva's interview / conversation with Felix Tamsut is one to listen to. It was an absolute ripper to actually have essentially a VIP seat into the episode. Two fantastic people talking about a bunch of different topics that need to be discussed more often and more frequently. Until next week, hope everyone has a fantastic week and, of course, weekend of football action. That's goodbye for now.